It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. The holiday season is the peak time of year for mail and package delivery. In 2022, the U.S. Postal Service processed 12 billion packages for the entire holiday season. But even with billions of successfully delivered packages, the agency is still losing billions of dollars a year. To get back on track, the Postal Service is set to put into practice a bunch of changes aimed at cutting labor costs, modernizing the delivery system, and making the service more financially viable. Regulators have expressed concerns about the plan, which they say could bring more changes than the agency has seen in effect since Ben Franklin was Postmaster General. Our next guest has been following the developments closely and is here for a look at what's ahead for the U.S. Postal Service in 2024 and beyond. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What was your experience sending and receiving cards and packages over the holiday season? Did you notice delays or was everything delivered on time? Are there changes in services you'd like to see from the post office? If you work for the Postal Service, love to hear your perspective on how things are going now, what you hope for, or maybe fear in possible changes over the next couple of years. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Jory Heckman is a reporter at Federal News Network, where he covers federal workers, technology, and data in government and the U.S. Postal Service. Jory, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thanks for having me.
Now, we've heard hopes, at least from the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, that we'd be having, you know, break-even years by now. That didn't end up happening, it looks like, in 2023. Can you talk about the shortfall and why that happened?
Sure. Yeah, that shortfall between what the Postmaster General expected financially for this year and what it actually got, the reason why there's that disparity is two big things. One was the rate of inflation going beyond the Postal Service's initial projections. And the other thing is just that the Postal Service saw a higher cost ultimately for its pension plans for its some of its employees. So between those two things, they were way off the mark of what they expected, did not break even in fiscal 2023 like they expected. And they said that in fiscal 2024, it's going to be more of the same, that they're going to see a similar $6-point-some-odd-billion loss for that fiscal year ahead and not break even as well.
I want to talk, before we get into plan changes, talk about some of the fundamental things that are driving these shortfalls. One big one, I guess, Jory, from reading your reporting and elsewhere, we just don't send letters like we used to.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge reason for why the Postal Service is going through these financial woes. A first-class letter is the most profitable product for the Postal Service. When you just look at the margin of what it costs to deliver that letter and what kind of revenue it's getting as a result of that letter. And so that is one thing that has just gone down and down and down. And there's just been, if you look back historically, mail volume has gone down significantly when we saw the 2008 recession. There's something in the order of, I've heard estimates of 30 to 40% of mail volume went away then and really never came back. And as we look at the damage done from the COVID-19 pandemic, there's some estimates that it could be a similar type decline in mail volume as a result of that and the economic toll that it took on everyone. So the Postal Service is obviously, from the perspective of delivering things, in a better spot than we were in 2020 and 2021. But in terms of its overall business model, that's still a thing that they are reeling from in a big way.
And Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, you've reported on this, you interviewed him last year, sounding the alarm, saying, hey, no, we're not going to run out of money next week, but in 5 years ago or so. Can you talk about the sense of urgency that the Postmaster General is sending out here?
Yeah, urgency is a good word for it. You know, the way that he describes things, and when I was interviewing him last year, everything from his point of view should have been done yesterday. He's a man of urgency and wanting his plans implemented very quickly. And so what he's really sketched out for this year and the years ahead is a cut in costs. It was in the order of billions of dollars a year, and an increase in revenue of about the same amount. And so the way that they're trying to do that is they're trying to consolidate some aspects of its massive nationwide delivery network, bringing some things together, merging some aspects of its operations together. One big thing that they are trying to do is bring the letter carrier side of things, your door-to-door mail carrier, bringing the post office delivery operation and the sorting aspect of the Postal Service, bringing that under one roof as a mega center called a sorting and delivery center. And so that won't be anything that most people will expect to see in terms of their day-to-day interactions with the Postal Service, but this is a massive rethinking of the Postal Service's network.
Talking to Jory Hackman with the Federal News Network, looking at the U.S. Postal Service, still seeing some financial challenges, big changes potentially in the works. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your hopes, your fears for possible changes, whether you're a postal customer. Do you send packages directly via USPS a lot? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jory, let's dig more into that change. This idea of these super centers, there's a name for them. I can't remember it. Oh, here it is. The sorting and delivery centers, these massive things. Where are we on that? Are these starting to spring up?
We have seen them crop up last year, and we're going to see that accelerate this year. The idea is what we've seen from these sorting and delivery centers so far is that they would be one at a time. The idea is that what we might see in 2024 is kind of waves of these being launched. The first one of these that we saw was in Athens, Georgia. And what that really meant for people is that it was letter carriers starting their days at these massive super centers as opposed to their neighborhood post offices. And what we had heard from USPS management is that might result in these letter carriers having to drive a little bit further of a commute to start their days, you know, in the order of 5 to 10, 15 minutes maybe tacked onto their commutes. But the thing that is, an open question really is what this is going to mean for the USPS workforce overall, with fewer facilities, fewer places where this mail is being sorted and delivered, what that's going to mean for those employees, and also what it's going to mean for those USPS clerks, the people that you go to a counter at and you order stamps or you hand them your package that you want to get delivered. USPS says that there will be no layoffs as a result of this rethinking of its network, but one thing that we have been seeing some elements of is that the USPS is saying that there will be no layoffs, but that there might be jobs moved elsewhere, moved across state lines. And so if you have a job that's being moved 200 or 100 miles away, it really is a thing where you may not want that job, and you may actually find yourself leaving the Postal Service.
People might hear this and say, well, hang on, I go to my local post office to drop off that package and buy my stamps or maybe get my passport or whatever. Are people going to have to drive to these super centers, or are these local post offices going to stay as they are?
So an important thing to bring up here is that the Postal Service has said, in addition to its no layoff pledge, that the retail aspect of its business, that its customers shouldn't see a change there. So that doesn't mean a closure in post offices for people who need those day-to-day services like buying stamps or getting their package sent off.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Cindy is with us in Stevens Point. Cindy, hi.
Hi. I guess my remark is I think that the internet and Facebook has really done away with people sending cards, writing letters. They're doing it over the internet instead of writing that letter. And to me, that is not personal. I don't want to hear Merry Christmas or I'm sorry somebody died over the internet. I want that personal letter, that personal card in the mail. And so I'm 64 years old, and I'm afraid that in the future there isn't going to be a postal service.
Cindy, thanks a lot for that call. Joria, the Postal Service wants, I think, more people out there like Cindy sending those personal cards, but that the trend seems to be away from that.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen over the decades is that, correct, that what we've seen is the mail decline is real, that we've seen fewer people send fewer amounts of letters using the Postal Service. And so that is a real problem. That is something that the Postal Service is trying to think about its business model overall. One thing that we have kind of seen from its leadership is that they're trying to capture a bigger piece of the package pie from people like USPS, from FedEx and other, from Amazon and these other, you know, shipping giants here. And so that is one way they're trying to, you know, capture more revenue, is just to really lean heavily onto that package side of things. But of course, letters is you know, something where the USPS has a monopoly. This is something that only it can do, but that no longer feels like a reliable means of revenue for the organization. It feels like something it has to do, but the revenue side of that is drying up. And so there might be some ray of good news. I know that some postal watchdogs, like the USPS Inspector General's Office, they've looked at generational use of the mail. And what they have seen is from Gen Z and newer generations that are being future customers here, that they are more heavy users of mail. They enjoy getting letters. And so maybe as we see these new customers emerge, that that might be a slight trend in the right direction here.
Thanks for that call, Cindy. We're talking to Jory Heckman, a reporter at Federal News Network. We're talking about his latest reporting on the U.S. Postal Service and its future. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you count on your local post office for one thing or another? Do you work for the Postal Service here in Wisconsin or beyond? Has your job changed at all? A lot, maybe in the next few years? Do you have concerns about the ongoing 10-year plan to make big changes? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Jory Heckman from the Federal News Network about the latest news out of the U.S. Postal Service as the agency moves forward with their 10-year plan aimed at breaking even financially. You could join in with your thoughts, your experiences, sending mail, delivering the mail, or sorting it yourself. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jory, before we go back to our callers, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, not a universally beloved figure, getting pushed back on some of his plans from postal workers and unions, from members of Congress and others. What are some of the main objections, concerns that people have raised about DeJoy and his leadership?
Well, the one thing that they're really concerned about at this stage is, you know, what this means, this 10-year plan, and what this reimagining of the USPS network is going to mean for its workforce and what it's going to mean for its customers. Those are two things that we, again, we've heard the assurances that there will be no layoffs as a result of this plan. But one thing is that the USPS, their total overall costs, about 70% of them are labor costs in some way. And so, you know, one thing that they have looked at is reducing overall labor hours, work hours, you know, tried to reduce that, you know, several million work hours last year, and an additional reduction of several million work hours this year, just trying to reduce those labor costs where they can. But it's a very big question about what the future USPS workforce is going to look like. And for these people who work in facilities, that there are talks of moving those facilities elsewhere, consolidating those facilities with existing ones, what ultimately that's going to mean. And that's where Congress is getting involved at this point. We've seen letters, we've seen town halls where members of Congress are fielding these concerns, and they're bringing them to the Postmaster General, asking them, you know, are there jobs that are going to be leaving my district? Are there jobs that are going to be leaving my state? And so that's where we currently are with a lot of these things. And we don't have good answers quite yet.
Let's go back to our callers. Cynthia is with us now in Madison. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello. I think that the Postal Service is an essential government function, and I think it's part of our public infrastructure. And it's unrealistic and unnecessary to require them to be self-supporting. I think that this is something that's worthy of taxpayer support. A post office is probably the only touch with the federal government that many communities have. And it just seems to be a worthy pursuit. It's the same thing as requiring public transportation to be self-supporting. Some of this stuff is public good and it needs public support.
Cynthia, thanks a lot for that call. And people have flipped that around, Jory, and said, you know, the requirement by law is the Postal Service has to, you know, maybe provide mail service to a rural part of Alaska where it costs them a lot of money. They can't just cut that service. So Cynthia's point about this being a public good, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that really strikes a nerve with a lot of people who are heavy users of the Postal Service, that it is this essential function and that they're really, their value to the country is that they go everywhere. They go door to door in places that other, you know, commercial giants like Amazon or FedEx or UPS wouldn't necessarily go. They go to, you know, some major metropolitan hubs and beyond that, but they may not go to rural Alaska, to your example. And so I think that's one thing that, you know, everyone is very cognizant about. I think what we've seen, especially with some recent coverage on this topic, is that, you know, rural carriers in a lot of places are being inundated with some of these Amazon packages. You know, we saw some coverage in the Washington Post about this not too long ago in rural areas where the staffing is meant to accommodate the mail volume that they've been getting. And then all of a sudden this deluge of Amazon packages happen. And all of a sudden they're scrambling to try to deal with that new workload.
Oh, thanks for that call, Cynthia. Speaking of those rural carriers, you reported back in November about some of those rural carriers not getting their paychecks on time a couple times last year. What happened?
Yeah, so what we saw initially was in early September, the USPS, they said that there was a major glitch in its payroll system that as a result, about 50,000 rural carriers, some part-time, some full-time, would not be getting their full paycheck or their entire paycheck on time for what that first pay period in September. And that was a situation where it took, in some cases, multiple pay periods for USPS to finally give them that paycheck that they were entitled to. They did, as a stopgap solution, offer them a money order as what they called a salary advance. And so they did some calculations. They said, this is probably this is a percentage of your gross pay. We think this is ultimately what your take-home pay would be. And so we had worked that out at that point. And then what we saw the week of Thanksgiving is that same problem persist on a much smaller scale. About 2,200 employees were affected then. It was actually a different technical issue, we were told, that was the result of that. But again, tough to not get the paycheck you were expecting the week of Thanksgiving. And so the National Rural Letter Carriers Association represents rural carriers. They have raised some concerns about this. They have filed a national level grievance demanding that USPS put measures in place to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. But as we talk about the workforce and making sure that USPS has the staffing it needs to deliver mail, deliver packages, this is not the kind of thing that they want out there that's happening, employees that are not getting paid the amount that they're owed.
Talking about the U.S. Postal Service with Jory Heckman, reporter at Federal News Network. Back to your calls. Brian is with us in Madison. Brian, hi.
Hi. Similar to what Cynthia said, I guess I'm a bit confused on why we expect the Postal Service to make money. We don't expect fire departments to make money. If some of these groups like Amazon are abusing the system and adding that additional strain, should we just start charging them more?
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Jory, what's some of the history behind that? I think it goes back to the 70s, the self-sustaining Postal Service idea.
Yeah, since the 1970s, the USPS has been under this model where they are largely self-funded through their own revenue. They get some very modest appropriations from Congress for some things like free mail for the blind, some very niche things. But by and large, they do self-fund, and they've been under this model since the 1970s. And there's been some talk of, you know, some postal experts out there wondering if that's a sufficient model for the years to come here. When you think about other comparable services, you know, people point to Amtrak and say that, you know, that is an organization that gets congressional funding from Congress every year. And so, you know, is that a model that makes a little bit more sense, that they get some stream of congressional funding? There are, of course, people who oppose that idea, but for the time being, you know, people really rely on the Postal Service, and, you know, there's a strong need for it to keep functioning in some way, shape, or form. And so that might be an option that people can consider. That's something Congress has considered for a while. I think it's worth pointing out that Congress only in 2022, they passed a large Postal Service Reform Bill, the Postal Service Reform Act, and that was supposed to deal with the Postal Service's financial problems. Clearly, it has not done everything that lawmakers have hoped it would do. It did kind of erase and wipe the slate clean for some of the Postal Service's financial obligations. It was supposed to pre-fund retiree health benefits well into the future. And so they're now under a pay-as-you-go system, which has been helpful for them. But there's clearly still things that they have still to work out that they have not done just yet.
Brian, thanks a lot for that call. Joy, in our last half a minute or so, what is the next big story you're watching from the Postal Service?
Well, I think it'll be really interesting to see the overall metrics for the holiday season that was. Obviously, it is a massive undertaking every year, but I'll be curious to see how these numbers compare to the previous holiday season, whether it will surpass that. Obviously, with the Postal Service looking intently at increased package volume, whether they actually did deliver more packages this year. And, you know, if not, then that's going to be something that they're going to have to take a hard look at and see what more they can do to boost that package.
Jory, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jory Heckman, reporter at Federal News Network. He covers federal workers, technology, and data in government and the U.S. Postal Service. He's with us for a look at a lot of news going on at USPS, including plans to modernize the postal network and what that means for postal workers and people who mail stuff. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're going to have some fun now to start off the new year, not with resolutions, though maybe this could be part of your New Year's plans. I want to hear about your hobbies. Call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've done this once or twice over the years. I always have a lot of fun hearing what you do to have fun. So let us know whether it's something you just started or something you've been doing for years or something you wish you had more time for. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Could be an outdoor activity, fishing, hiking, paddling, skiing, if you could find some snow this year. Maybe it's a sport or music, making stuff, knitting, sewing, weaving, carpentry, metalworking, creating art, collecting something. The list goes on and on. So, join in now. You are our guest with your favorite hobby at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. As we do, we asked around Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Television. Our own Beatrice Lawrence, Central Time producer, recorded this about her hobby.
So I've been playing trumpet as a hobby for a long time, and there was a point when I was technically at my best, but I was so anxious about being good at it and practicing all the time that I started to honestly dread playing and performing. And now that I put less pressure on being good at it, I enjoy it a lot more, and I find it relaxing and fun again, even though I'm not where I used to be.
Beatrice adds that she loves video games but can't play online multiplayer because, quote, I'm not very good at it and will be laughed off the server, but I don't care. Single player or couch multiplayer is enough for me. How about you? What is your hobby? Join in now at 800-642-1234. Another musician, Lisa Nalbandian from our Milwaukee Bureau, the bureau chief there, regional manager. Lisa says, I play in the Wauwatosa Ukulele Club. The teacher makes it such a joy that it really is about enjoyment, not perfection. I also got a banjo lele for Christmas. That's going to be, I guess, a banjo ukulele combination. Tyler's a musician. He doesn't know about it either. This is a new one to me. I got to check out a picture of that. Thanks for that, Lisa. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Hey, Jeff in Superior. Happy New Year. Jeff, what's your hobby?
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Jeff, hey, you're on the air. What's your hobby?
Well, I'm a perennial numismatist, I think I'm called. I'm a coin collector.
Oh, yeah.
So every year I look for something that the Federal Reserve misstamps or misprints or double stamps, you know, the coins. I'm going through the coins at the laundromat or in the grocery store making change. I love with the new year, there's new coins. So it's fun to look forward to that.
Now, I know different coin collectors, numismatists, I think you're right. Yeah, I have different specialties. Yep. Some will do a particular country or historical period. Sounds like you're mainly doing U.S. coins.
Oh, yeah, for sure. United States coins, something that I can buy and sell and collect. I got a 1959 quarter recently that I sold for $4.
Interesting. Now, I lived pretty close to the Canadian border growing up, Jeff, so Canadian coins were pretty much legal tender except for in vending machines. Do you get any Canadian coins in your collection?
Well, I may be wrong, but I think they discontinued the only Canadian coins now are
the loons. The loonies, that's right. Oh, the $2 now. Well, I haven't lived by the border in a while. You're right. The little coins are all gone now. And so it's part of my childhood,
then,
I guess.
And the King of England is the royal leader is a man, so there's going to be new coinage from the United Kingdom. So there's a lot to look forward to.
Excellent, Jeff. Thanks for starting us off at 800-642-1234. We're inviting you to call in and share your hobby, collecting, doing stuff, crafting, you name it, 800-642-1234. Robert is with us now in Viroqua. Robert, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I bought a lathe, a small lathe recently, and I decided to make gifts for the family this year as opposed to going out and buying things. And I've made some handles and some bowls, and I'm new at it, so I'm learning as I go, and it's been so rewarding. It's like, matter of fact, we had some scrap wood that I was burning in our fireplace, and I cut that up in beautiful wood. It's like you get into the wood, it's like art, the beautiful oaks and maples and things like that. And I've joined a turning club in La Crosse, and I'll learn more about making bowls and different things. It's been very exciting for me.
Wow, I haven't touched a lathe since shop class. I'm not even going to say what year that was, Robert. So had you ever used a lathe before you went out and bought one?
Well, similar to you, the last time I used a lathe was actually in a shop class also in elementary school in Detroit, Michigan.
Wow, just up the road from where I went to school, yeah.
Yeah, so that was it, and I don't know even why I bought it, but I decided I was going to get it and try it, and I love it. I've really had a great time with it.
And you're already giving presents with it. That is fantastic, Robert. Thank you so much for sharing that. We're inviting you to share your favorite hobbies, or maybe one you miss and want to pick up again, or something you wish you had time for. Hobbies old or new are our topic. You can join in and share yours at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm glad Robert brought up woodworking because Paul Damberg, our Northern Regional Manager, has a bit of a story here. Got a quote all here. I have taken up woodworking and am making artisanal heirloom hardwood cutting boards. I source only regionally harvested sawmilled hardwood and then cut, assemble, clamp, and glue, and finish them myself. When I use handles, I use locally forged stainless steel handles, oil dipped to darken and have the forged look. Paul goes on, I've always had a flair for woodworking and have self-taught myself about how to make the boards and improve my skills. And as far as perfectionism, I have learned that it is a target that's hard to reach and completely out of reach if I want to keep up production levels. Besides, to show they're handmade, there needs to be a bit of imperfection, or they could all be made by machines. That's the side of truly handmade, an imperfection or two to show the handmade nature. I got to say, Paul sent some pictures. He's selling himself a little short. You saw these at a store, you'd pay pretty good money for them. You know, they are fancy things. Paul, thanks a lot for sharing that. If you are a crafter or woodworker yourself, well, you could share pictures too over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. And hey, one of our newer additions here at Wisconsin Public Radio, Molly Gardner, our Eau Claire regional manager, says, I've been knitting for years, but last year for Christmas, I received a learn to crochet kit from my boyfriend. He thought crochet and knitting were the same thing. Bless his heart. Yeah, I think I could explain the difference myself. Molly goes on, despite not really wanting to learn crochet, I stuck through it and made a little dinosaur. Needless to say, that created a hyperfixation with crocheting little animals. It took me a long time to be anywhere near perfect. In fact, I still make mistakes. When I found an animal I wasn't happy about, I'd keep it around my apartment as a way to remind myself things aren't perfect. I would also immediately remake it to see where I went wrong so that I could compare a bad animal to a better one. In 1 year, I've created about 20 decent-sized animals. Wow. And I've started taking orders from friends and family to be better at my craft. Well, now we want to hear from more of you. Tell us about your hobby at 800-642-1234. You've heard some great stories there for inspiration. What is your hobby? Is it music? Is it crafting? Is it art? Is it something outdoor, something you do with people or on your own? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you ever tried to make money from your hobby? Did that make you enjoy it more or less? And are you like Robert? Did you join a group? It was Turner's for him. Have you joined a group for your hobby? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Hope to hear from you coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about hobbies, and our featured guest is you. We want to hear what hobby brings you joy, whether you've been doing it for years or just picked it up with the new year, something you wish you had more time for. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Ellie is with us in De Pere. Ellie, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What is your hobby, Ellie?
I like to hand paint, hand paint watercolor cards.
Okay, how long have you been doing that?
Oh, several years now.
What made you first decide to pick that up?
Well, I was a quilter, and then the watercolor just kind of tickled my fancy, so I started doing it.
Now, do you display them around about the house, or do you actually use them as cards and send them to people?
I use them as cards. I send them to people. I also sell them.
Oh, okay. Are you making money from it? Did it make it feel like less of a hobby and more of a job?
Not really, because I still enjoy it.
Excellent.
Although I did end up making about 300 Christmas cards this year.
Wow. Okay.
A little overboard.
I guess so. Now, are you like painting pictures of things, or are they kind of abstract designs? Paint us a picture of what your cards look like.
Oh, I did little elves this year, winter scenes, you name it. I do a lot of florals, birthdays, you know.
Awesome. I love it, Ellie. Thank you so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. We've got more comments from our colleagues here. Maria Bechtol of the Educational Communications Board shares the origin story for one of her hobbies. I had just moved into a townhouse in Fairbanks, Alaska, and my new neighbors asked me if I sewed. I responded that I did, and their eyes lit up. Then they asked, "Do you quilt?" And I answered, "No." They paused, looked at each other for a second, and then announced in unison, "Well, now you do." Back to your calls at 800-642-1234 with your hobbies. Beth is with us in Pewaukee. Beth, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What is your hobby?
So I was standing in front of the Walgreens aisle with all these different lotions one day, and I was like, I don't know what the difference with all these is. And I started reading ingredients, and some I couldn't understand. So I went home and started to look up, like, making your own lotions and deodorants and salves and foot scrub, like, cream and rub. And so I've been doing that for about a year now. It's just, like, coming up with my own body products to use.
Interesting. So what kind of raw materials do you have to go out and buy to start with?
Yeah, so I started with a really basic one, which was shea butter, almond oil, some coconut oil, and now I've added, like, beeswax pellets and started to add different kinds of essential oils. I've used, like, I've made my own deodorant, and it's really shocking how much money you can save.
Really?
And also it feels, oh my gosh, like crazy. And I know what I put on my body. I know what I'm putting in it, and it's all natural. And so I gave some away for Christmas last year, and this year I've gotten texts and messages from people saying, like, are you doing it again? Can we have that same one? I've been practicing with different essential oils for the different seasons. So yeah, and my sister actually was like, hey, we should maybe start a little something.
Uh-oh.
Because her friends at her school, we both teach, are like, oh, you smell good. What is that? So I don't know if it won't become a hobby, though, if I start selling.
Right. Now, I got to ask, Beth, it sounds like there's a lot of winners here. Have you had a failed experiment along the way?
Yes, just recently, actually. it turned the lotion, it's called Whipped Body Butter. And it looked great going in, but when it came out, it was, like, as hard as a brick.
Oh, no.
So now I've started to, like really, at first I sort of just threw stuff in there, but now I'm being a little bit more precise about measurements and, you know, yeah. My failures, though, are always stepping stones to success, I
Excellent.
Think.
That's a great attitude to have, Beth. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We are taking your comments, your thoughts about hobbies. What do you do? What is your favorite hobby? Do you make stuff? Lotion, as we heard. Do you have a piece of shop equipment that you love to work with? Games? That's one of mine. Join in at 800-642-1234. I'm a longtime board gamer, role-playing games, computer games, you name it. Paring down my collection a little bit. Still probably too many games. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorite hobby or hobbies. 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And we heard from James on Facebook. James says, part of me wants to pick up scale modeling again. I still have a few 1 to 35 scale Tamiya World War II tank kits. James, more power to you. I hope you do it. I tried that a couple times as a kid. I had one snap-together airplane and one glue-together airplane. It marries skills that I do not have. Attention to detail, fine motor skills. Yeah, the click-together one, there's only so many ways to go wrong with it once you start bringing glue into the picture. It is not a plane I would send any pilot up in. How about you? Join in with your hobbies at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on another caller. Elizabeth is with us in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy collecting recipes. Just clipping them from magazines, from newspapers, getting cookbooks. Not that I make everything, but I just love looking through cookbooks and love looking at recipes.
Now, do you go hunting, Elizabeth, for older recipes, whether it's, you know, from somebody's grandma's collection or, you know, a magazine from 50 years ago you find in a used bookstore or something?
Just a variety of different things, but I do love making my mom's recipes that we
nice.
Saved. She's passed on, but that's really, those are the most special recipes.
That's great. And now you clip a recipe. How are you storing them or archiving them or organizing them?
Well,
or are you?
My daughter could attest. I've got file boxes of recipes, and she's like, Mom, you'll never make all of these. And I said, I'll never make all of these in my lifetime, but I'm going to pass them on to you. So, yeah, that's how I do it.
Excellent.
I cut, you know, I make it nice, cut them out, and put them into categories and,
okay.
What I do.
So there's some organization there. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Elizabeth. Ted joins us now in Spooner. Ted, hi.
Yeah. I got a sawmill from my uncle and started making furniture out of chunks of trees that had a lot of branches on or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I done one with a cherry oak burl, a cherry burl.
Uh-huh.
And when I slabbed that, it looked like bird's eye maple where the burl was at, and finished that up. And that turns out really nice. It's kind of interesting. Each time you saw a piece, you see a new grain that you've never seen before.
That's great. So what kind of pieces of furniture have you made?
Several coffee tables, end tables, log table and chair set. I got a turn lathe, so I turned out several lamps, bowls.
Wow.
Anything to do with wood.
And now are you...
I had a carpenter. I was a sawdust for brains, so I work with wood.
Are you starting to give these away as gifts now? You can only use so much furniture, I'm guessing, in your house.
Well, I tried to sell some, give some away. I thought about trying to go on Facebook, sell some, but I haven't got that far yet.
Ted, thank you so much. What a great hobby. I love it. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Still time for your call if you want to share a hobby real quick at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Oh, one more from a colleague, Colleen Leahy, one of our producers on Central Time, says, I got into improv comedy about a year and a half ago after wanting to try it for a long time. It's such a mood booster, spending a few hours laughing, socializing, and playing with people, even though it's ridiculous more often than not. Colleen says, I call it clown school. It's really difficult. That's a good one. Oh, yeah, Sarah Hopeful. I didn't see this one. Technical director says, the past year I've gotten really into paint by sticker books, like paint by number, but significantly less work. I like to work on them while listening to albums on my record player. It's really meditative and keeps me off my phone, which is a plus. Let's go back to your calls now. Kathleen is with us in Madison. Kathleen, hi.
Hello. I like to, I get animals. People will call me and say, hey, there's a deceased raccoon by the road over here. I'll go and pick that up, and I take the skull, clean all of the meat off, and put it in a beetle tank, and to get it all the meat off of it.
Uh-huh.
And then I make little displays for educational purposes.
Oh, okay. So who ends up?
So I have
go ahead.
Oh, I have a whole collection of mammals of Wisconsin. And then I've actually done some of those same critters. I've done the furs, so I can do this, thing called, I call it the bone boxes presentation. And, we'll just show, you know, little kids, homeschool kids, stuff like that, and talk about where did I get the animal. You know, this is the beaver from this pond, and show them how long the teeth are when they grow up, back of it inside the skull and stuff like that.
How did you know how to do this, or did you find a community online? Where did you get these skills?
Well, I started out as a biology teacher, so I kind of knew my way around, you know, dead stuff. But when I wanted to get a little more serious and do a really good job of cleaning and making the displays and wiring the jaws so you can open them, close them and stuff. I spent time on YouTube, a lot of information on Professor YouTube. So, and then trial and error, of course.
Excellent, Kathleen. Thank you so much for sharing that. Time for one more caller. Dick is with us in Darlington. Dick, hello. What's your hobby?
Yes.
Yeah, what's your hobby, Dick?
Yeah, collecting rolls of duct tape from countries of the world and the United States.
Well, how many countries are you up to now?
We have 92 countries.
Wow. Okay. And is duct tape different in different countries, or is it just like it says on the package where it's from?
It says from the package where it's come. So the uniqueness is finding somebody in the country, getting them to contribute, sign a roll of duct tape, and then document it with their story and what it is. And it's led to some very cool things with, actually, I got in touch with one of the astronauts that was building the International Space Station
wow.
through his parent. And while he was doing this, Jeff Williams in 2005, they put a covered up file card with duct tape. And during the space station building, two shuttles came up. So this duct tape folder is covered with 15 astronauts' signatures.
Wow, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. That's a great one to end it on. But hey, you can keep sharing your hobbies, email ideas@WPR.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. If I get some more stories, I'll share them later on this week here on Central Time. If you've been dreaming of producing a musical film where Mickey Mouse and Peter Pan sing Yes, We Have No Bananas as a duet without getting sued, this could be your lucky week. Disclaimer, you might still get sued. Each New Year's Day, copyrighted materials created 95 years ago enter the public domain under federal copyright law. The class of 1928 includes Peter Pan, Tigger from the Winnie the Pooh extended universe, and songs like Mac the Knife and Yes, We Have No Bananas, and Mickey Mouse. But only Mickey Mouse is portrayed in the 1928 short Steamboat Willie. That's why I say you might still get sued if your version of Mickey Mouse looks more like later versions of Mickey Mouse. So create that artistic masterpiece with Mickey, Peter Pan, Tigger, and the great songs of 1928. Just give me executive producer credit for the idea. On second thought, keep my name off of any legally binding statements. This is Central Time.